Hey, it's Wednesday, or at least it is now. Whenever you're watching, it might be another time, but that's not why you called. Tonight on Ham Nation, we're going to shine the club spotlight on Springfield, Missouri. Some great people doing great things up there. And also, George has got $5. He's not going to get a foot long. No, he's going to build a transmitter. And we have Dr. T live with solar update stuff and Comet NEOWISE stuff. And we're going to talk, we're going to talk about all kinds of things that come to the top of our head. And you're going to love it because it's Ham Nation. You're a ham. And that's why. So just sit back, grab yourself a nice cold beverage, and let the festivities begin. Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 463 for July 22nd, 2020. The club spotlight shines on Springfield, Missouri.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and this is Ham Nation. And we're going to have a lot of things going on tonight. We usually do, but this one's kind of special. George is going to show you how to take $5 and turn it into an AM transmitter. Yeah, no joke. And I don't know what else is going to happen, but George, you're here. Anything else special tonight?
I don't know what all is going on tonight. That's all I've got, but I think maybe you've got a special crew here in the wings that are going to come in and kind of tell us how we need to be doing it in the clubs.
We'll find out, won't we? And Gordo, how are you doing? You good?
We're good. We wear the face mask all the time because, as you heard today, California is now ahead of New York and probably the rest of the country for COVID cases. So we're very cautious. And yep, clubs coming together via Zoom or other club meeting methods. This is great. And this past weekend, Bob, 6 meters opened up in Southern California, including this station, talking all the way to Fox November 21. That's the Jersey, New York area. So 6 was hot. And we look forward to our segment tonight all about coax. Go ahead, Bob.
That'd be good. And Amanda is here. And very special, everybody listen up, Don has Tamitha live. Tamitha will be here live. And it's really going to be good. As I said, there's all kinds of things going on. But I talk about it and we get into some of these things, but tonight's pretty special, and I'm talking about spotlighting some of the clubs. I do hope that if you have a club and you're doing things or not doing things, email me because we want to hear from you and spotlight your club. But tonight, kind of very special because it's the club in Springfield, Missouri that I guess I'm still a member there, but they're all friends, and oh boy. So, Victor, why don't you hit the button and let's make it happen. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There it comes. Yeah. And tonight, tonight, of course, we're talking about the Southwest Missouri Amateur Radio Club. These guys are something very special, and I want to say hello to each of them. So let's bring them aboard. Rodney is the president. Jordan is the IT and the brains of it all. And Steve is the secretary. But we'll get into all of the things because they each do a lot more than just that. That's for sure. But I've got some slides, some of this stuff I took down there, but this is one of their tech meetings. Tell us about that, Jordan.
So we realized that one of the things that you don't find in clubs a lot is really getting hands-on and working inside radios anymore. It's a lot of just go to YouTube and, you know, read the book and that kind of stuff. So we really wanted to build a place that we could work on a radio, show people how stuff works. And, you know, we break some stuff now and then, but we have a good record of fixing most of it too. So we've got about anything you can think of in there to kind of diagnose and fix radios. And it has probably been one of the single greatest tools we've had to be able to take new hams and those who've been licensed for a long time and really kind of excel them to get that aha moment that they understand. It's like, oh, okay, this is what I've been reading about. That's why you have to do it this way, or that's how you, you know, terminate a coax connection. So it's been a really good way to take a lot of the stuff that, you know, people get thrown at in amateur radio and really put some eyes to it and understand why and how and what for kind of stuff. So it's been a good event. It seems to grow every time. And we just actually moved to a new location. We're still getting everything set up, but it's bigger and better and heated and cooled better. So we're ready for even more people to come out and join. So
when I visit you, I'm looking at all the parts. That's only about a third of that wall full of resistors, capacitors, you name it. And so they can build things, fix things. And that's a thing that really impressed me, is that if somebody has a radio not working, that becomes the subject for a tech night. And you guys are just doing it right. And Jordan, I guess this is really part of your work to have some of this great equipment. But it's amazing that the club has all of this, thanks to you, available if they need it. So you're building a new one, though. You've moved, and I can't imagine moving all that. But I guess all that's going back, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it'll be all that plus some. We hope to have not only all the bench equipment to be able to do stuff, but one of the issues we had in the past with doing tech days is the shack was kind of separated from the garage out there that held all the equipment. So the plan now is we'll have the whole workbench ready to go, but we'll also have two dedicated stations out there. That'll be my shack when I operate, but it'll also be available to operate during tech days. And we plan to do some Route 66 on the air out of there, some contests, and you know, if things keep going next year the way they are, we may be doing field day out of there. So it's going to be a lot more accessible, a lot better parking, and ready to go.
When you have club meetings or anything, you really know how to eat, because the gals all come in and the guys come in. And I mean, it's a feast. I thought that was so cool when I would come to some of the meetings and you didn't have to worry about eating. And that's wonderful. You hold them on a Saturday night. So, hey, you take your family and go to the club meeting and eat. That is too cool. But the main thing that I see when I was there is the fact that you guys really go out for field day. And a lot of your members are young, new members, and you teach them so much on the field days. And I really applaud you for some of the things that you're doing and showing them how to make things work. That's so important. And field day, you do a winter field day also. Was that what this was, a winter?
No, this one was actually just this past June. Steve was working on trying to get some satellite contacts, and I was kind of looking at how he was doing it on his equipment. We did do winter field day this past year, though, and it was a pretty big success. A lot of people around here don't really go out to do anything for winter field day, so we kind of did a multi-club invite to basically all the clubs around Southwest Missouri to come out and have some stuff. Of course, we had great food, too. That's really why we do all this, is for the food. We have to have something to do during those meetings with eating, so we got into amateur radio.
You know, they say if you feed them, they will come.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That's basically how we do
it. Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk about for a couple of minutes, the club, somewhere along, I wasn't around, but I had heard somewhere along about the 80s and going in through the 90s, it kind of like dropped a little bit. It didn't have all of its life. And Steve, you might know a little bit about, to tell us about that. You and I think your wife had a lot to do with bringing that club back. And I'm so impressed with what you did to get it going.
Well, Bob, I'll tell you, we owe a lot to you. You were a very much impression on us. One of the things that I remember, I started in the club in 83, so I can remember we still had a lot of military veterans that were club members, ham operators, and they were great. They did a lot of things, and we fell into the same thing a lot of other clubs did during that time. People were getting diverted into doing other stuff. So we started kind of thinking, hey, you know, we need to have, as they say, content. You know, yeah. I got elected president, so it was kind of my job to make sure we had something ham radio related to talk about at every meeting, and that's what started the process of getting us back to being on track again. I think last count, I think our membership is getting near to what it was back before the 80s when everyone was a member. But you got to do stuff. You got to have, as they say, content.
That's so important, always important. We're not seeing a lot of that in some of the clubs today. That's the toughie. But you guys did it right. Let's see. Did we freeze up there? You guys still with us? So I want to talk to Rodney. I think we dropped him.
They're still back.
Okay, there we go. Rodney, how long have you been the president?
Well, I'm going on my second term. They basically voted me in again here at the first of the year. So I've been president since 2017, roughly, I believe it is, 17, something like 18, that. Something like that. Yeah, it was one of those more like a ball and told type deal. You know, they always tell you if you want something to be done and you start speaking up, you're usually the first one to get hired into an officer position. And so that's what happened. Hey, do you want to be president? Sure, if the club wants me. Well, that was unanimous. So there you go. So here we are, you know.
One of the major things about the Springfield Club is Route 66. I had a lot to do with this because I've worked Route 66 for many years from here in Illinois. Well, when we bought a home down there 10 years ago, I started checking in to find out Route 66 didn't have a station in that lineup. You know, they have stations all up and down Route 66 from California to Chicago. And Springfield wasn't in it because Springfield... It's the home of Route 66. You can go downtown to the square and they'll take you to the building where the decree was signed by all the governors around. It's quite a historic thing. And I worked hard with the originators of the Route 66. It had been going for about 15 years. And bingo, got together with the club and they took off. Oh, did they take off? And what they did, you'll notice behind my head is the flag you just saw. That's over on a piece. It's an actual part of the Route 66 highway. And what they do is they set up a tent across the road here. And not only is it there for the hams, they go out to let the public know about ham radio. And there's the QSL card that we come up with. That's actually a motel right in the middle of town. And those cars are there all the time, 55 cars. It's really cool. So they are definitely there. But I applaud them for this. They get the press. And that's something that all of you club members, if you're doing anything special, take a lead with the Southwest Missouri Club. Get the press out there. They'll do it. You just have to know how to get them there and have places and things to do. This is another one of the members. This is at that Route 66 field day. There's my good buddy Al, W-Z-R-E-R-E. We've been friends 1959, 1960, from back here in St. Louis. And Al's down there now. But this was a major event every year. What have you got planned for this? Anything special? You really don't need it. It's a special event of its own. What's going on with it, Rodney?
Well, I mean, we were going to try to get back with what we did last year. We had great hosts. The Gay Parita was a really great place for us. We got a lot of traffic there. A lot of outsiders actually stopped and made contacts. We had several, you know, it's kind of funny because they, a lot of them couldn't even speak English, but they knew ham radio. So if you throw them, put a mic in front of them, they usually do pretty good. So they helped us make contacts there. And this year, we're going to try to work with them. We're also going to try to have multiple stations if possible. And we're also going to try to have Jordan stations worked out through the week. You know, again, we may have a little barbecue here and there, kind of entice people to come out and work with us. But we're really excited about it this year, and we're really wanting to make this quite the event and make some numbers this year.
Well, I want you to come back because you just mentioned that Gay Paree thing. A lot of people probably wouldn't realize that. It's a gas station from back in the day on old Route 66. There's a whole history about that. But we want to work on that, and we'll make sure that we do have that coming up because that's a neat thing that you guys do. What else is going to happen, Jordan? Anything special once you get your shop back in order? You got any projects for the club, or you just keep doing what you're doing because it sure is successful?
Well, we'll definitely keep doing what we're doing. You know, it's like you said a while ago, it's something that you want to keep active, get the press out. You know, with the first tech day we had, actually, we had the local news station here show up. Out of the blue, we didn't even call them. They just heard that it was going on, and we ended up getting a new spot for that. So it was really fun. So we'll definitely keep doing what we're doing. But we've got a couple things up our sleeves. We've done a lot of new stuff in the past couple years, and we have a lot more new stuff to bring out. But as far as projects go, it's going to be a project just getting that shop ready and rolling. Yeah. And hopefully it's good to go by Route 66 on the air, so we'll have a couple stations operating in there, which is a really good opportunity because it's a week-long event. So you're not, you know, focused on trying to just get set up real quick and then tear down a day later for field day. You can get up and operate all week long. So the people that want to learn how to do operation, a little like contesting, it's a good opportunity.
Yeah.
So.
We'll be ready for it.
Oh,
we
yeah.
can do it now. It's not a problem. We'll just set tables open.
Yeah, we'll have it.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
One of the things that you guys have done always is bring the families and the ladies in. And I want to say that Patty, Steve's wife, was really, really a big part of bringing the club back. And so they deserve to be recognized. But I really appreciate you coming on tonight. And I want to finish with this great picture. This is a marvelous picture. And tell me a little about who is that, Jordan?
That was actually Judith, KD0TOT. She was operating CW during the winter field day. We did it inside of a building that's often used for music concerts and stuff like that. So you're actually seeing all the stage lighting, and we were all set up on the stage up there. And it turned out to be a really good event and a really good picture.
Wow. Well, that's terrific. Well, I have a great ending for all of us. I'm thrilled that you could be with us. And we'll want to come back when Route 66 up and running. And I miss you guys. But if
we
they get this
too.
Pandemic ironed out, we'll be down able to come down to see you.
Patty sends her best. She had to visit with the dentist today, and she wasn't feeling well. I know she would love to have been here and told a little bit because she loves this as much as we all do. So I just wanted to let you know that's why she did not make it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, we want one thing. I got some things from you, Jordan, and I want to have Victor play this wonderful, wonderful video that you have from Newport. Is that cool or what? My, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. You guys, you got it together. Well, thanks for being with us tonight, and we'll look forward to catching up on the air with you, maybe. Everybody can go spend some time on their website, and it's really simple, just smarc.org. You should go there because it's really well done, let me tell you. So thanks a lot, guys. 7-3 to all, and... we'll talk to you really soon.
Thanks for having us. 73.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm a little biased about it, but as you can see, these guys and gals really do, they really come on strong, and it's what we need is clubs to really be active. And I want your club to be on Ham Nation. Just send me an email, and we'll have you on the show. It's no problem. We got a lot coming up. hamclubs@twit.tv will get it. Or michael@ARRL. That works too. So very good. Thanks so much. And Gordo, what do you think about a club out in the middle of the Ozarks? You wouldn't expect that, right?
Oh, you never know. And Rodney, Jordan, and Steve, thank you for your leadership. And, you know, the industry is behind you. Larry at the W5YI group says that free of charge, they're happy to bring the Ham Instructor Program to any club or any individual that's working on getting new licensees on the air. Simply go to haminstructor.com. And he'll give you the whole works on how to sign up. Real easy sign up, and then you'll begin to get into the mainstream of teaching ham radio. Not only the classes, Bob, as you well know, but getting on the air as what Rodney, Jordan, and Steve and their club members are doing. That is terrific. Well, tonight we're going to talk about a dilemma. And if you look over my shoulder, and I'll illuminate it with a light, and Victor, you may need to maneuver around to this corner that, and let me get my head out of the way. Look at all that. Look at all those coaxes. Is that amazing? All those coaxes going up the wall. And when you get on the roof, they all look the same. Great job, Victor. And the question is, how in the world do you make sure you got a good hunk of coax before you put it into use? And then if you are there all by yourself, how do you make sure you're on the right piece of coax that you're standing on the roof going, I got the right one or not? So, Victor, let's take a look and see all about coaxial cable. Well, we always recommend buy the very best coax you can. For those on 6 meters on up, and by the way, 6 meters this past weekend, CQ Magazine VHF UHF contest, we were talking Southern California, many of us into Fox November 21, which is the grid square all the way across the country, and they were pouring in for about 30 minutes. So some pretty good conditions on six on Saturday. And then on Sunday, on 6 meters, those of you with great coax, those in the Midwest, Bob's territory, made contacts with Japan. So six was hopping this past weekend. So start off with good coax. LMR 400 is pretty much what a lot of hams like because it'll still fit around a PL-259. And speaking of the PL-259, make sure that you know how to identify each one of these connectors. There's, well, you know where they are. It's the PL-259, second one over on the left that we're going to be dealing with because it's real easy to test. Well, we're doing more than testing. First thing I like to do if someone ever gives me a big hunk of what appears to be great coax, this happens to be RG8X. I want to make sure that I don't have a shorted connector, so I always back off the outside sleeve of the PL259 to take a look at the solder job. This was not bad, but I always worry that whoever soldered it up sort of would look like they were using a blowtorch. No offense, George, dating back to the days of blowtorches rather than soldering irons. You can see that just one thread and they're off the air. Yeah, that'll short right out when they go ahead and slip it over and start the routine. So always make sure that if you have sort of an unknown connection that you get it checked out. Any kind of cheap volt ohm meter will do the trick. First thing we look for when I check out a piece of coax with PLs on each end before I thread it up there with all the other ones up to roof level is I like to go across center pin and the outside, and I make sure that the outside is indeed making contact with the barrel assembly on the inside. And I want to see zero conductivity, infinity resistance, no conductance. And on this meter, on the 1K scale, better certainly would be a meter that had a much higher reading than that. But nonetheless, I'd like a 10K scale, like on my Simpson 260 here that many of you have. We see that there's absolutely no movement of the meter at all in the upper portion of the screen. So next, well, that tells me that the coax is likely okay. If I see something like this, where it goes about halfway up and there's nothing connected at the other end, then I begin to look around and I'm thinking, why do I have something that looks like it's sort of a connection and maybe not? And it takes my thumb that usually does the trick. The thumb knows all. And that is, in the next shot that you'll see here, I put my thumb across the PL259 center conductor and the outside, which goes to the braid. And at the other end of the PL259, I have a simple volt ohm meter on ohms. I go to the highest scale, R times 10,000 on my Simpson 260, or R times 1,000 on a less expensive meter. And when I put my thumb over it and I'm looking at the meter right next to the coax, I will see it go up to about mid-scale. And everybody's thumb has different conductivity or different resistance. If you wet your thumb, you're going to see it go higher and higher for conductivity with less resistance. So lick your thumb and put it across there and hope nobody's transmitting a kilowatt on the other end. And if we go to the next shot, Victor. So the thumb test is a great way to get started if someone gives you sort of an unknown piece of coax. But again, if you see that meter that's reading about half scale, that tells you maybe you've got moisture in the line and that coax is history. So now I've got a piece of coax that's threaded up through the roof, and I've got a whole bunch of other coaxes that look the same. First of all, I'm looking at this gold-plated PL259, and I notice that the adapter, the UG255 or 256 adapter, is not all the way seated. That tells me I probably don't have a good connection of the ground shield on the coax. So I'll take it apart and see what's going on there. But you should see that all the way nested. So then we'll take a good look. And now here it is all nice and clean. The inside is nice and clean where I've soldered to the braid. So I'm going to put on the shack end of the coaxial cable. And I never, ever test coax when it's hooked up to a transceiver, because some transceivers have the coax going right to a field effect transistor, and you hit it with an ohm meter, it doesn't like any kind of microamps or milliamps going through the FET. So make sure you're on a PL259 disconnected from the radio. This capacitor will be my best friend down at the ham shack, because it's going to do something similar to my thumb up at the roof end where I can't see it. I'm working on my own. So I take a pair of simple test leads, and I put it on one lead to the center of the PL-259 and the other lead to the outside jacket of the PL-259. Then I go to the roof level, and this capacitor is going to do something when I check what's happening up there at the roof level with my meter, my simple little meter. And the meter, when it sees that capacitor on a properly executed PL-259s at both ends and on a good piece of coax with no leakage, the meter is going to jump and then within about a millisecond go back down. That is the capacitor getting charged, which tells me I'm on the right piece of coax. If I've got four or five different PL-259s, I'll look at each one with my meter. I first short out the PL-259 up at the roof level to make sure that the capacitor is fully discharged. And again, the capacitor is just all by itself. There's no voltage on it. I then touch the meter across there. I'll see nothing changes. That tells me I'm on the wrong piece of coax. Let's try this one. Nothing changes. Then I hit this piece of coax. It goes up and then instantly drops down to infinity resistance. So that tells me I'm on the right piece of coax that goes to the ham station. Oh, that coax that had about a half a scale of conductivity between center conductor and outside braid. This was literally dripping with water when I undid it when I was testing coax one day at a pal's house. So always be suspicious of any inline splices that moisture can get into. So again, whether you use a digital meter or an analog meter, I like the analog because it really gets your attention. It goes up about mid-scale and instantly falls to zero as that capacitor instantly reacts to the ohm meter on its highest ohm scale across it. So that's a very simple way to play with capacitors and PL-259s. And again, you'll see it all at zero on your digital meter. Sorry about that. I had my thumb across that. But when I hit it with a capacitor, bingo. And then the capacitor is discharging, and now it's down to zero conductivity or infinity resistance. So then I know I'm on the right piece of coax. So next time you're working on a project and, oh, God, there's no one around to help me, you got it made. Just get out that big electrolytic capacitor. Doesn't make a difference as to which way you go. Get out your trusty little meter. I like the analog meters better. And just touch it and you'll see the meter go up and then drop right down. So that tells us I'm on the right piece of coax. And I make sure it drops all the way down, not hangs about halfway. That would tell me maybe I've got some moisture in the line or I've got a bad capacitor that I'm working with. Usually the electrolytics are pretty reliable if you got them relatively new. So that's my story. I hope all of you have a chance to get on with DX Engineering this Saturday when they have their open house, and they'll be bringing in experts that'll be online. That's going to be exciting. And then remember the QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo coming up on August 8th and 9th. That's a major job. They've got all the world's best speakers. I don't know how they're going to pull it off on Zoom, but I'm assured they've got it made in the shade. So I can't wait to see both that and the DX Engineering get together this Saturday with QSO Today, August 8th and August 9th. Tonight, about the last night you can see Comet New Eyes. We've seen it many times here, about 9:15 California time, right after your sunset. Look toward the northwest and see if you can spot the comet. So best 73 to all, and I'm got to jump out of here, but we'll see you next week. Let's now take a look and see what's happening with ICOM America that helped me make those great contacts this past weekend.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo, or just over 2 pounds. With RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. 5-watt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. A large 4.3-inch color touchscreen and live band scope with waterfall. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro SD card for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRPP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
And ICOM wants to remind you to register for QSO Today's groundbreaking Virtual Ham Expo. The expo will be filled with virtual exhibits and guest speakers, all from the convenience of your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Visit QSOtodayhamexpo.com to register. And ICOM invites you to enter weekly after each episode of Ham Nation at ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you could possibly win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for July, that new radio is the ICOM ID4100A entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features. It's a VHF, UHF, dual-band mobile, one band at a time, with a new user-friendly interface, built-in GPS, DV fast data mode, terminal mode, access point mode, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's downloadable Android and iOS apps available as well. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode and register to win. And thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Ham Nation. Tonight, I am reaching way down in the smoking soda barrel and pulling up a project to show you just how simple it can be to make a little transmitter. You know, you don't know what you've got around till you start looking through your junk box. And I found this in one of my junk boxes.
This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to build a CW transmitter for $1.65. It only takes one part, and that's this right here. This is an ECS 100 series clock oscillator. It's used in many computers and computer-related products. This particular one is a 4 megahertz version. That's the only one I had, and that's just barely inside the 80 meter band. Let's flip it over and look at the other side of it. Here's the ground lead. It's soldered to the case clearly. The lead beside that is not connected. The lead below the ground, our antenna or output lead, and the remaining lead, the plus 5 volts DC input. Our first step, of course, is to draw a schematic. So we'll put the ECS 100 right here in the center. That's our main component. And there are four posts or leads on the device. This one's not connected. This one is the ground lead. And also, it goes to the negative of our power supply, which in this case is going to be 5 volts DC from the Ham Nation power supply. This lead is the output, and that's where we'll connect our antenna. Here, we'll connect a switch that we'll use as our CW key to turn the device on and off. And this will go to our positive 5 volts. And that's all there is to making a simple CW transmitter. Since I have no idea where my CW key is, and I promised you a little smoke and solder last week, well, we're going to make at least one connection here. We're going to take a paper clip and use that for our CW key. So we'll take a small piece of wire and twist it around the paper clip and then apply a little solder to it. Then we'll screw it down to the board. And we'll also stick another wire in the other hole on the board and put a screw into that. Now we've got a CW key that we can use. It's not the best in the world, but probably good enough for my CW skills. This is a very simple little project. We're not going to commit it to solder. We'll use a piece of breadboard, which allows us to plug our components into the holes on the board. Each of these columns here are connected together so that we can plug our wires in and connect one item to the next. The row across the top here is all connected as one, and the row across the bottom is another separate bus. All the ones in the center are broken through the middle here, so we have two rows of columns there that we can plug into. Now we've got our oscillator plugged in, and down off the ground wire, I have installed a little black jumper that goes down to the bottom bus, which I'm going to use as a ground bus here. And we'll take the negative lead from our power supply. Remember the regulated hamnation power supply? Well, it's back. The bottom row is our negative, or our ground bus, and the top row will be our positive. I've plugged a small jumper into the row where the output of the chip is located, and we connect a test lead to there that goes to our antenna. We should probably connect a ground down here on the bottom too, but since this is so close to my receiver, I'm not going to bother with that. And there's only one part left to install, and that's our CW key. We'll connect one lead from our key to the positive voltage bus, and we'll connect the other lead into the input voltage of the oscillator module. Now there's only one thing left to do, and that's to adjust the power supply for 5 volts. Now our $1.65 transmitter is ready to go. All we have to do is tap our paperclip key here to start transmitting. Well, that was a lot of fun, but we still got some time left, so what else could we do with this transmitter? Well, we could add one more part and turn it into an AM transmitter. Back to our schematic, the first thing we need to do is disconnect the switch, and we'll replace that with an audio transformer. The secondary of the transformer will connect in series with the 5 volts supplied. Now, we will have to readjust our power supply so that we still have 5 volts at the oscillator module, as the transformer will drop the voltage a little bit. The primary of the transformer will connect to our audio source. This transformer has a secondary impedance of 8 ohms and a primary impedance of 1,000 ohms. The power supply voltage flows through the secondary of the transformer to the oscillator. Audio is fed into the primary of the transformer, and that causes it to be added and subtracted from the power supply voltage, therefore changing its amplitude and producing amplitude modulation. I've removed the CW key, so now let's install the transformer. And I'll put two little jumper leads here on the primary side. That will connect to an audio cable, which I'll plug into my iPhone as our audio source. On the secondary side of the transformer, we connect one side to our plus 5 volts, and the other side of the secondary will run over into the power supply input of our audio oscillator. Let's get a little modulation from the iPhone.
This is W5JDX testing my cheap AM transmitter. CQ, 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 AM. This is W5JDX testing my cheap AM transmitter. Did it work?
For a CW, or Morse code signal, we'll only see the one peak right here in the middle of the screen, which is the carrier. For AM, when there's no modulation, you'll only see the carrier. When you modulate the signal, then you'll begin to see sidebands appear on either side of the carrier. Today we saw just how simple CW and AM transmitters can be, and even larger transmitters are built with those same principles. Join us again next week when I have no idea what we'll be talking about.
That guy there looked mighty serious to me. I don't remember exactly when I did that, but I didn't know for sure that it was going to work with modulation, but it did. And you see, that's very similar to how a lot of old AM broadcast transmitters were made. No, they didn't use those little crystal oscillator modules there, but they did use a transformer to put the modulation onto the power supply, and that's how you got modulation on the transmitter. Now, I did do this one other time with a 3.58 megahertz crystal and actually connected it to my antenna. And I don't remember what episode that was on or if it was only on Amateur Logic. I don't remember. I'll have to look back and see. But I got out and rode down the highway a little bit, and I got, you know, just about 2 miles out of that one little oscillator module there. So you never know what might be lying around in your junk box that you can put to use. So that's Smoke and Solder for this week, and we'll see what happens next week. But right now, we've got the man with all the news about amateur radio, and then some. It's Don Wilbanks.
Yeah, and hey, George, good to see you. That's a slick little device, especially for $5. That's quite the project. Hey, I want to show you a picture. This happened July 20th, 2012, which happened to be a Wednesday night. My son Tyler was sitting in with us on Ham Nation, and unbeknownst to me, he had a clothespin on his chin. I thought that came across on Facebook the other day as a memory, and I thought, well, that's just cute as that can be. And now, coming up next Wednesday night, I will not be here for Ham Nation because that young man is graduating from college. Wow. He'll be 21 in January and has his call now, N7TMW. Wasn't even thinking about ham radio back then. He was just thinking about putting clothespins on his chin. So proud of him. And in fact, if anyone wants to watch the graduation, it'll be coming on at 7 p.m. next Wednesday night, an hour before Ham Nation at 7 p.m. Central. And it will be streamed on the college website. He went to Pearl River Community College, got a 2-year IT program, and prcc.edu, Papa Romeo Charlie Charlie dot Echo Delta University. you know. Anyway, prcc.edu if you want to watch my son graduate from college next Wednesday night. Cannot be more proud of him. Got an extra treat for you tonight. Dr. T is going to be here live talking about probably a little bit of Comet Neowise, but there's a good chance of a solar hit coming in a couple of days. But first, let's get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2229, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020. As mentioned last week on Ham Nation, Christopher Bro, KD8YVJ, is the recipient of the 2020 Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF Memorial Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award. To hear his response when Mark Abramovich, NT3V, YHOTY chairman, called him, be sure to listen to the current Amateur Radio Newsline report. Congratulations again, Chris. Meanwhile, in Ireland, amateurs are celebrating the completion of a long-awaited network of DMR radio repeaters.
The fourth and final repeater of the Galway Digital Radio Group's DMR network has been installed and the network is complete. The repeater, EI7LRD, became active on Saturday the 11th of July, allowing the repeater group to realise its goal to provide DMR repeater coverage for most of County Galway and some areas of nearby counties. According to Steve Wright, EI5DD, the coverage is designed to be uninterrupted because the four repeaters are set up to permit roaming, which allows for as much of a continuous connection as possible when switching between repeaters. DMR has been growing in popularity throughout Ireland in recent years. Steve told Newsline he believed that probably the Galway area now has Ireland's best digital radio facilities. The four-repeater network is supplemented by a 2-metre multimode gateway for DMR, D-Star and Fusion, as well as a 2-metre C4FM Wires X gateway serving Galway City. There's also a 2-metre Yaesu Fusion repeater with Wires X in the southeast of County Galway and a 70-centimetre D-Star repeater covering Galway City. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
Black soldiers who served in the American military after the Civil War have found a place in history, and ham radio operators are honoring them, too, with a special event later this month.
Amateur radio operators will be paying tribute on HF as well as satellite in honor of the soldiers who made history when they joined the United States Army in Texas following the end of the American Civil War. Members of the 6th Regiments of Buffalo Soldiers, as they came to be known, were black Americans whose military service was authorized by Congress on July 28, 1866, creating two units for cavalry and four for infantry. Using the call signs W5W and W5B, hams in Texas will operate in the worldwide special event on July 25th and 26th. Commemorative QSL cards and certificates will be made available. Shortwave listeners are also being invited to take part in the event, which will also be made available for listening live on Facebook on Saturday, July 25th at 1 p.m. Central Time. Look for the live stream on the Facebook page called Buffalo Soldiers Program-Texas Parks and Wildlife. Texas Parks officials are devoting the month of July to celebration of the legacy of the Buffalo Soldiers who served in the American West. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
Will a ham radio transponder end up on the European moon lander now under development?
The European Space Agency has received a proposal from AMSAT Deutschland to include an amateur radio transponder known as a Lunar Art on board the large European lander, now under development for a moon mission. AMSAT DL says that inclusion of the Lunar Art platform would permit additional radio science experimentation globally on amateur radio frequencies and provide a backup communications option during a crisis or when the ESA network is busy. The goal would be for the Lunar Art and its payload to interact with international AMSAT groups as well as schools and STEM organizations around the world. In its formal proposal to the ESA, AMSAT DL writes, quote, "Such a challenging project will certainly motivate especially the next generation to achieve personal goals in education, science, engineering and beyond," end quote. The European Moon Lander is currently under development by ESA engineers and is envisioned as a multi-purpose project ranging from supplying cargo to supporting further human exploration of the moon's surface. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, Ed Durant, DD5LP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. All right. Thanks to the Newsline team for putting that together for us. And so always some good stuff. Newsline's just an amazing organization. I'm so thrilled to be part of it. Oh, look. Bill's license plate is tipping. I have to fix that. Maybe I'll do that right after we hear about the solar report from Dr. T.
Check.
Big doings on the sun. What's going on, T?
Hi there. You know, it's actually been pretty exciting. We had a solar storm hit us just a few days ago, and we're about to have yet another solar storm. And I wanted to make sure I gave a shout out to Jerry K8VGL because he's watching live tonight, and he's a very important person. He helps me a lot on my Patreon feed. So I just wanted to make, and he said he was watching. He actually texted me to let me know he's watching. So I better do a good job, otherwise I'll hear from him. Anyway, so yes, we do have a lot going on. Here is a picture of the sun right now. And right around the 18th and the 19th, we did have a launch of a solar storm. It's hard to see. I wait till this thing resets, but it's up here in the north. Whoops, let me back over and get my hand in the right place. Right over here, you'll actually see kind of a coronal hole thing kind of changing. You see one hole kind of disappear and another one appear up in the north. You kind of see a little bit of changing right there. That was a solar storm. It was a stealthy solar storm for obvious reasons, very hard to see. That thing is now headed, it's earth directed, and it's going to probably graze us around the 23rd, and I'll talk about that in just a little bit. We also have a new active region that is rotated into earth view, and once again I got to wait for the sun to reset, but you'll see it down here on the southern limb right here. And this little guy has managed to boost the solar flux back up into about 69 right now, maybe into the 70s if it continues to stay alive. It's actually a new cycle sunspot. So once again, we're saying hello to solar cycle 25. And the nice thing is we also have another active region that's going to be rotating into Earth view. And I'll show that in a second. Meanwhile, we also have a coronal hole. You can see it right here. This is going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone, this coronal hole, in the next couple days. So with that, we have that solar storm coming on the heels of some fast solar wind, and that is going to probably bump us up to active conditions, possibly even storm levels, especially at high latitudes. So get ready for that. Now, if I switch to, if I switch to our, this is a stereo. This is the basically our far-sighted monitor, our partially far-sighted monitor, because stereo is now beginning to rotate back into the same frame that we're seeing the Earth is. But it's still got about a seven-day view of the sun's far side. And you can see this region down here. This is the region I was talking about. This one is rotating into Earth view. It's region 2767. But if you notice, look. We're so excited. Whoops, I'm pointing too far. We have another region that's going to be rotating into view here. This is rotating into stereo's view now. This could be region 2768. It is also a high latitude region, therefore another solar cycle 25 region. And it's wonderful because it means more new cycle activity. It definitely is firing off some solar storms. You saw one right there. Look at all those little needles and going... So we have a lot of really big hopes for this particular region as it rotates into Earth view. It could bump us back up into the marginal range for radio propagation on Earth's day side. So hold your breath for that, because that will happen in about maybe 5 days or so. Now, just letting you know, if you switch to the solar flux, it has been pretty low, as you can see here. This is the X-ray flux and by proxy, the solar flux. But look at the little rise. Do you see this little rise over the last couple days? That's from region 2767. So it is showing you that solar flux is boosting a little bit. We're even getting a little bit of flare activity. So if you guys notice a little bit of noise on the bands every now and again, just that, don't worry about it. It's not your rig. It's just the sun waking up just a little bit. Now I'm quickly trying to, because I'm trying to get this done fast for you all. We're quickly going into that solar storm. Let me stand in the right position here. You can see this is our solar storm prediction model, ENLIL. This is NASA's version of the model, and you're looking down at the sun from the North Pole. You can see the sun showing in white here. Okay, and then Earth is off to the right. It's this yellow circle. Whoops, if I go too far. That's that yellow circle right there, okay? So you see this, you see that little bubble thing popping off? That is that solar storm that was launched on the 18th and 19th. And it looks like it's going to hit Earth right about the 23rd. If I flip to a frozen picture of that, where it's all annotated so you can see what I'm talking about, here is that bubble hitting Earth, if I point in the right position. Okay, so there's that bubble hitting Earth. That is the solar storm. It looks like our impact time is late on the 23rd into the 24th. Again, this is probably going to be a grazing passage, but it's going to be followed by some fast solar wind. You can actually see some fast solar wind in this spiral arm that comes out. That's actually going to be a fast wind chaser. So it could enhance and lengthen the period of time we have storming conditions. So expect some issues, especially on Earth's night side around the 23rd into the 24th, possibly into the 25th. And as I flip to my 5 day outlooks, here's the solar storm conditions. I won't take too much time. At high latitudes, we're only expecting unsettled conditions. Whoops, I got my mouse cursor there. We're expecting unsettled conditions, but we do have up to a 50% chance of a major storm on the 25th. Now, granted, we're expecting that solar storm to hit late on the 23rd and into the 24th, but right about when that fast wind hits, that's when we're kind of expecting, you know, like a 1-2 punch. And that's why we're getting the 50% of a major storm chance on the 25th. At mid-latitudes, we're looking at possibly active conditions over the next couple days, and then possibly a minor storm chance, just a small one, but you got it there. And that's about 15%, just in case it's cutting off on the bottom. But then things will begin to quiet down as we move in past through the week. And yes, I know, Don, you asked about NEOWISE. Believe it or not, with the last couple, let me see if I can stand out of the way because it's such a pretty picture. We have been getting gorgeous shots of NEOWISE all over the place. But if you happen to be in the right locations, you're actually getting it with aurora as well. So you'll get yet another chance. We've had gorgeous shots of NEOWISE with aurora clear down into places like Ohio. This is over Lake Superior. We've seen it in Maine. We've seen it in Washington State. So if you happen to be in the right place at the right time, with this solar storm coming, you may get some of the pictures of a lifetime when it comes to NEOWISE. And that's it.
Very, very cool. Now, where in the sky should we look if we want to see NEOWISE?
Well, Gordo already talked about that. Gordo talked about it being, it's, you can see it both in the morning sky in the and in the evening sky. And I'm trying to remember which way it's easier to see. You still can see it in the morning sky about an hour, maybe an hour and a half before sunrise. But it's also getting easier to see in the nighttime sky just after sunset. You have to look in the morning sky. It's going to be in the north, northeast sky. In the sunset, after sunset, it'll be in the north, northwest sky. So it's either look after sunset as the sun begins to go down, or look in the morning before it gets too bright, before dawn, and you should be able to see it. And it should be, at least in the morning, it'll be under, essentially under the star Capella. In the afternoon sky or in the evening sky, I don't remember the star, the constellation it's going to be rising in, but I think Gordo might have touched on that earlier.
Okay, very good. Well, we've got a good exposure to the north, so that should be good. And you know, my wife's name is Dawn, and she doesn't get up until the sun's good and warm. So there is no pre-dawn for Dawn. It just doesn't happen. She likes to wait until the sun is good.
And I don't know. Here's the neat thing, though. I don't know if you can see this, but if you look, okay. So here's Neowise. Here's the dust trail that goes off like this in the white. But you can also see the ion tail as well. Do you see this very faint blue thing that goes off this way? So a lot of people don't realize that comets actually have two tails. They have a dust tail that's neutral, but then they also have an ion tail. This is a charged tail, and this tail always blows directly away from the wind, so from the solar wind and from the sun. So it blows outward with the solar wind. So if you followed this tail all the way down, you would find the sun, because that ion tail always blows directly away from the sun, no matter which, matter even if it's trailing into the sun or moving away.
Right.
Yeah.
Very cool. One more question from the chat room before we go over to Amanda. How much longer will it be visible? What's our window of opportunity here?
I believe, I hate to say that, it's getting dimmer all the time because it is now moving away from the sun.
Yeah.
I believe we can see it in through the end of this month and into like the early part of August. But I guess it all really depends upon, you know, if you're asking, do you see it with the naked eye or can you see it with telescopes? You'll be able to see it with telescopes for definitely through August. But naked eye, it's getting dimmer all the time.
Getting there. All right. Very, very pretty pictures of the comet. We've got some other pictures. Bob Heil was strolling down memory lane, and he tripped over two or three pictures that we want to pull up. It's actual photographic evidence of Dr. Tamitha Scove at the Dayton Hamvention. So look at there. Look at the pretty pictures. And there's Dr. T and, of course, Dr. Bob. It was a meeting of the doctors. And go to the next one. There's, look at there. There's girl power. Dr. Bob surrounded with Valerie and Dr. T. That's great. What year was that? Do you remember? Tamitha? It's been 2 or 3 years ago, probably.
That had to be 2 years ago. I only show up basically every other year. So, that had to be two years ago. I don't even remember those photographs being taken. I'd like a copy of those, please.
you may have had a drink or two. I'm not saying.
Well,
I'm just saying. You're kind of like a comet. You just come around every two or 3 years.
I will neither confirm nor will I deny anything.
That's right.
Neither.
Tamitha Scove, a.k.a. the unindicted co-conspirator. Thank you, Dr. T. Great stuff. Of course, follow her on Twitter, at Tamitha Scove. If you don't follow her on Twitter, well, there's something wrong with it. I don't want you in the house. And also check out her, there it is, spaceweatherwoman.com. Amanda, come in and save us now, because I know you have some questions for the good doctor.
I always have questions, and Tamitha, so nice to have you with us this evening. And I just want to say another ham asking about how much longer this would be visible. You said his son got some great shots. Again, I'd like to encourage everybody, share those with Tamitha on Twitter. She loves to retweet, so you might get famous from your awesome photos. And I got to tell you.
Yes, please.
Yeah,
I will highlight them in my solar storm forecasts. I absolutely will. I do. As a matter of fact, I have a solar storm forecast that I'm going to put out here probably within the next 24 hours hopefully before that storm hits. And I'm not even going to be able to show all of the photographs, that all the field reporter photographs. So it's going to take me 2 weeks to do it, because I've got something like 34 of them, and I can only highlight maybe 15 or so at one time. So yes, if you have gorgeous Neowise shots, definitely shoot them to me on Twitter, and you might end up in my in one of my forecasts. So
now my next question is, was the Neowise photo that you had in the background, was that your photo?
No, that is Lake Superior photo. That is, as a matter of fact, I can go to the, this is one that's going to end up being on, likely in my, my forecast. And I believe if I go back, wonder if I can go back, let me just, if you don't mind, if you want me to take just a second.
Oh, go ahead.
If I go to Twitter, I will show you. Let's see. And yes, if you want to see a ton, I mean a veritable ton of photos, I'll even try to make this bigger if I can, if it'll let me. Yeah. So you can see there's that thing, but you can just see tons of these photos. And don't get dizzy. I'm going to slide down this very quickly to try to find it. It is, I've gotten so many of these from all over. Gotta look at this one, for example.
That's
this one
amazing.
Is just stunning.
It's gorgeous.
You get them all over. It's been all over Saskatchewan. It's been all over Alberta and Ontario, Canada. It's, like I said, it's been, here's Manitoba. I'll get out of the way for that one as well. So you can see all of these on my Twitter feed. People have literally, I mean, a lot of, there it is there. And there's the one we're looking for, or one that's similar. It was Lake Superior photo. I had two choices. I wanted to do either this Lake Superior photo or the one I put up, and they're both from this Twitter, field reporter. And I mean, they're just getting these shots everywhere. They're just stunning. So it's been in British Columbia. It's been, like I said, it's been in Maine. It's been down in Ohio, with and without Aurora. It's been in Washington with Aurora. We've had just some stunning shots. So please feel free to go to the Twitter feed, and you will find a ton of reporters there, because there are a ton of people who not only, you know, part of the space weather community, but a lot of them are ham radio operators as well. And when they're not during a solar storm, if they can't do any DX, then they go out with their cameras and they take pictures. So I've had a lot of people, you know, tell me, saying thank you. I can't use my rig right now, but I do have a camera, and I got out and got on top of my roof and started taking pictures, and wow, I get to see the aurora. So, it's that's one of the wonderful things about space weather, is that there's always something amazing to look at or to see or to enjoy.
Well, thank goodness for ham radio operators. They're knack of all trades. If they can't work the radio, they're going to take some photos. That brings me to my next question. This was from Ed, WB5ORT. Are there any effects that we can take advantage of from Neowise?
Any effects?
Such as
ham
radio.
I would think that would be very difficult. With the ion tails, I mean, when the comet was closer to Earth, perhaps. But now that it's really far away, I seriously doubt it. It's actually quite small, and I'm not sure anybody could even try to bounce a radio signal off it. I know that if you know what you're doing in a scientific point of view, you actually can. You can sound these things. You can even, I mean, we've done that as far as Jupiter that I know of, to be able to see, you know, emanations coming from it. But I would think, as an amateur, that would be extremely difficult, and you can't do it here in the Earth's ionosphere. The comet is way too far away now.
Good to know. And the next question, not related, is how long does a solar cycle usually take to heat up the bands? He says, for example, some regular 10-meter openings.
Right. Well, sadly, you know, we are dealing with, and I'm going to go to the stereo image here. We are dealing with a solar cycle that's taking forever to heat up. It heat up the sun. And the reason for that is actually because the two hemispheres of the sun, the northern and the southern hemisphere, it's ready. It's ready to go to solar cycle 25. It's been ready for a long time. As a matter of fact, the big, this region, 2767, this region is actually a quite a large sunspot. And it's the largest that we've seen. What we're waiting for, however, is the northern hemisphere. We've seen very few sunspots on the northern hemisphere that are new cycle sunspots. And once this hemisphere really decides to get more regions like this one that's coming around the limb that you see here, once the northern hemisphere decides that it wants to do that and really go into solar cycle 25, we will see solar flux jump up like a rocket. And if you notice, you'll notice on the sun a lot of times small sunspots, both at high latitudes. If I do my hands right, high latitudes up in the northern hemisphere, and then high latitudes down here in the southern hemisphere, you'll see sunspots, just teeny tiny little bright regions. You'll see them kind of lining up, and they'll come out, and then they'll submerge under the surface. They're kind of like submarines that kind of stick their periscope up for a moment and then dive back down. Once that northern hemisphere decides that it wants to actually turn on, you will see a lot of regions pop out and stay out. And that's what will cause that solar flux to trigger and rise very, very quickly. And we've been expecting this essentially starting spring of this year. We thought we were going to see it. It hasn't quite happened yet. We had a kind of a false start with a couple M-class flares, and then everything has gone quiet again. So it's very frustrating because there are a few of us who had already hoped that this cycle would rise already. But it's looking a lot like the prior solar cycle, which had a very long minimum. So this minimum is kind of following that one, and that's why it's taking so long, because this is not what we've been, you know, what we saw, you know, 20 years ago. This is not your grandmother's solar cycle, let me put it that way. And so it's just taking longer than we anticipate. So I can't really say, but I do believe probably within the next 3 or 4 months, we should be really seeing this thing come to life.
I'm ready. I think everyone in the chat room is ready. Don, on an unrelated, let's go back to NeoWISE. Did you and Don sit out in the hot tub and check out NeoWISE yet this week? Have you had
now,
any
we have
use?
A southern We have a southern exposure from the hot tub, so our view is to the south. So we'd have to actually get out in the front yard to look for it, which we may do. We're going to hit the hot tub again. But we hit the hot tub every night. I mean, that's what we do. And we'll probably walk out in the front and do the hot tub. Actually, I've been walking out in the yard and doing satellite contacts. That's been a hoot.
I saw some of that.
I've been digging that. So, yeah.
Tell me what spiked your interest to start working some satellites?
Well, I went to Hamvention years and years and years ago. I don't know how long I've had this antenna, but it was I bought it at Hera, and I've probably had it 10 years. I walked by the or longer maybe. I walked by the AMSAT booth, and they had a deal on the Elk antenna, and I thought, well, I'm gonna try some satellite. So I bought the antenna, and it's you know, sit over here in a corner forever. And I don't know, just something piqued my interest about doing satellites. I saw something on YouTube as I was grazing YouTube one day, surfing YouTube, and or something piqued my interest. I forget exactly what it was, and I said, you know what, I have everything I need to do satellites. So, yeah, so it's been fun. I'm enjoying it.
Great. George, is George still on?
Yeah.
George, there he is.
You been checking out NeoWISE?
No, I haven't.
I live
in town, and there's a lot of trees around and such, and a lot of light pollution, so I just really haven't even tried, you know. Can't see anything from here.
I hear you. So we went out and checked it out a couple nights in a row. And the weird thing is, I don't know if anyone can relate to this, is that you could actually spot the trail with the naked eye, right underneath the Big Dipper. But if you looked directly at it, it was very, very hard to see. But if you looked at it kind of sideways out of the side of your eye, you could actually see it kind of focus in, which was pretty cool. And Tamitha, how was your view from your home? A little hard to see?
Well, in my home, it was hard to see, but I wonder if I could show this to you. I don't know if I can. I'm going to try to put it up. I was at Big Bear just a couple weeks ago, and we had an amazing view of it. Here's a slightly enhanced picture, if I can get it to you. Can you see
that?
Oh,
wow. Look at
that.
That's
right on my cell phone. Whoops. Wow. And it's not even focusing on it. If I can get it to focus, it'd be a lot better. Let me try to turn this down a little bit. Maybe you guys can see. Yeah. So it's still kind of blurry, I can tell. But at any rate, yeah, that was right over the hill or right over a mountaintop at Big Bear just before the sun rose. And that is with a cell phone, strangely enough. So it is possible, you know, and this was back, on the like the 12th or the 14th or something. So it's been a little while. And again, the thing is dimming all the time, but it's still worth a look, definitely. And people can still catch it, I think, with the naked eye and with binoculars. So it's if you get a chance, it's definitely worth taking a look to see. I mean, it's not going to be brown again for something like 6,000 years, right?
Absolutely. It's your one and only chance. So I never saw Haley's comment when it came through in the 80s. I missed that one out. All right. Don, do you have any other questions for Dr. T? I didn't see anything else in the chat room before we wrap it up here.
I'm just thrilled that she could be with us live and kind of on short notice, too, especially to talk about the activity on the sun and to share Bob's pictures and talk about NEOWISE. It's always a treat to have you on the show. Your recorded reports are amazing, as always, but to have you on live, we get to see more of your personality and we get a lot more information. And we really appreciate you. So thanks for taking the time tonight to come on. We really appreciate you.
No worries. Much obliged. It's my pleasure. You guys are my family. So absolutely.
Awesome. George, any final words for us tonight? You're muted.
He's muted.
You're muted, George.
He's muted his receive, too.
You're muted, George.
And it looks so witty.
The sunspots here completely wiped out his receive audio as well.
Yeah. I was saying get on the air. Don't do like me. Actually get on the air. I wanted to do that contest this weekend, but I had family obligations and just couldn't find any time for it. So I hope a lot of you made some good contacts over the weekend.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that it seems like I never have time to do HF. And then when I do come in, well, you know, the solar activity is just or lack thereof has got the bands crapped out. So the satellite I've really been enjoying is I can go out in the yard about 10 minutes. The pass is over. We had two passes back to back within about 8 or 9 minutes today, AO91 and AO92. And unfortunately, I didn't make any contacts on either of them. But I've made contacts now on SO50, on 91 and 92 using a 5-watt handheld and the elk antenna, the log periodic for 2 meter and 440. And it's addicting. I got to tell you, if you're looking for a new challenge, that's it. Because you can't see the thing. Obviously, it's a 4x4x4 cube. And, you know, it's at the closest, it's I think the closest pass was 360-something miles away from me. And that was like go feed that dog. That was like an 89-degree pass. It was like right overhead. And, you know, and it's traveling 17,000 miles an hour. And so to aim an antenna at that and actually talk through it, it's a challenge and it's addicting. And I just, that's going to be my new thing, I think, for a while. Amanda, any final words for us before we get out of here?
Oh, I do love working some satellites, and we don't have the setup right now, but it was always a lot of fun when we did do it, and I always felt like it was success every time I made a contact. And it's so quick. It's like, you better do it right now.
Yeah.
And make your exchange. But I digress. Get on the satellites because it is really addicting. Let's go over some nuts. 7192, 14268, 14 Charlie for D-Star, and 31012 for DMR. Get on those nets. And thank our net
controls.
With Absolutely. That, Dr. T, again, so much thank you for joining us this evening. Such a brilliant woman and such a great personality. So we always enjoy having you on. Bright smile.
Absolutely.
And a brighter
thank
sun.
You.
Yeah, final words for us tonight.
Thanks so much,
Dr.
you guys.
T?
It's always a blast. Final words?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. If you guys happen to be local and you know the PAPA system, I am actually giving it a virtual event. I'm giving a talk on, let me get out of the way, on Saturday for the PAPA system. Going to be helping raise some money for them. And I think it's going to be a great talk. They're asking me about Solar Cycle 25, of course. So if you just happen to be in the local vicinity and a member of the PAPA repeater system, come check it out. It's this Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard or Pacific Daylight Time. So that's how about that. Mind that plug?
Look at you doing ham radio stuff all of a sudden.
Yeah, no. Oh, my gosh. Who knew? Who knew I actually was a ham radio operator? Oh, my gosh.
Dr. T, thanks so much for being with us. Yeah, thanks so much for being with us tonight. Also, our thanks to the SMART members, the Springfield Club up there, and Bob Heil, and of course Victor twisting the knobs back in Petaluma, and you watching tonight. We do appreciate you, and most of us will be back here next week. I'll be watching my son graduate from college, which I'm thrilled about. So for all of the unindicted co-conspirators here on Ham Nation, we'll say 7-3. Good night. We love you. We appreciate you. And most of us will see you here next week. So good night, everybody.
That's right. Good night.
Good night.
Want more Twit? Well, you gotta check out iOS Today. It's the show where Leo Laporte and I talk about everything to do with iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, watchOS. It's all the devices, all the best apps, games, and services, everything in between, plus a whole lot of laughter. Twit.tv/iOS for iOS Today.